I'm really excited to be speaking with Kat Lazaroff, Associate Director at Resource Media in the Washington, D.C. office, about the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change report that's being released on Friday, November 18th, on managing the risks of extreme weather events and disasters to advance climate change adaptation. Thanks so much for joining me, Kat.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm wondering if we could just start. I know you're super busy with this event coming up as Resource Media is handling the press work for the IPCC around this report. I'm just wondering if you could give us a sense of why this event is so important.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And just to clarify, we are doing media outreach to reporters in the U.S., but we're not officially affiliated with the IPCC.
Okay, great. Thanks for that.
This is a really groundbreaking report because it talks not only about the science that tells us what sorts of impacts are already happening from climate change and what we can see in the future, but it also offers some recommendations on the things that communities can be doing now to help prepare for these impacts. And this is the first time that the IPCC has really combined these two threads in a single report. And I think that's really an important take-home message. This report has been sort of shorthanded in a lot of people's minds as being a report on extreme events. But as you said, it's actually a report about managing risk and about preparedness. And so when the report comes out, when the summary for policymakers comes out on Friday, what we're going to see is a certain amount of content on what the current state of climate science is regarding extreme weather events and other climate impacts, but a lot more of the content of the report is actually focusing on why certain areas are more at risk of particular kinds of impacts and how those risks can really be reduced.
And what is driving the timing? Is it just that there's so much more known now about the specifics of climate impacts and how different regions, not just in the United States but around the world, will really be looking at particular types of risks?
Well, that's part of it. This is one of the IPCC's special reports that was called for at a meeting about 3 years ago. They decided that they wanted to take a deeper look at what the science can tell us about the links between climate change and extreme weather, and also this facet of risk management. And it's just incredibly timely that it's coming out this year. It was always slated to come out this year, but given the kinds of events that we've been seeing in the United States and really around the globe, I think there's a real appetite for more information about those links. And what the report is going to say is that in some cases we can draw fairly clear links between certain kinds of events and climate change. And we can say with some certainty that certain kinds of events like heat waves and droughts and in some cases extreme precipitation events, heavy rainfalls, heavy snowfalls, are going to become more common and they're going to become more severe. They're going to have more impact and cause more damage thanks to climate change. But more importantly, we haven't really had a look before at where these sorts of things are having the worst impacts, both in terms of human lives and in terms of economic costs. And there'll be a lot of information regarding what kinds of peoples are actually being impacted in the worst way. And some of it is common sense. If you live on a coastline that gets hit by hurricanes, and hurricanes are likely to become even stronger because of climate change. More rainfall events from them, like we saw with Hurricane Irene, and higher wind speeds, so basically more intense hurricanes. If you're living along a coastline, you need to be worried about that, and you're particularly vulnerable to that sort of impact. But in addition to those sorts of common sense things, this report actually looks even more deeply at why communities are at risk if they haven't actually started to prepare, if they haven't started to put adaptation plans in place, if they haven't started to build resiliency into their infrastructure, into their disaster management plans, if they haven't got the infrastructure in place to help move people quickly out of a risk, an area that's at particular risk, that dramatically raises the risk that those communities are facing. And I think that's why this summary for policymakers that's coming out this week is really going to be a crucial tool for policymakers around the globe to think about the kinds of actions they should be taking now to prepare for the kinds of impacts that are coming down the pike.
Well, it seems that there would also be some pretty significant implications for communicators too, because what you're in essence saying is that this report moves us from an argument that has been primarily about should we be acting to, if you're not acting already, here are the risks that you're facing. So it really is a fundamentally different orientation than the debate we have been in to date on the issue.
I think that's exactly right. A lot of the recommendations that we're going to see in this report are what the IPCC characterizes as low risk or no risk actions. So they're the sorts of actions that we should be taking whether or not climate change is impacting us today. We know that vulnerable communities along our coasts, in low-lying areas, in drought-prone areas, are already facing these impacts. And the science is telling us they're going to get worse. So there are a lot of actions that are proposed that really offer benefits in the short term in helping these communities weather the sort of everyday risks of weather and extreme events, and also start to build preparedness ahead of future events. So in terms of how we talk about this, talking about actions that can have multiple benefits, that can help us now and can help us regardless of what's coming down the pike, is really the way we need to be thinking about getting communities to take these sorts of actions and start preparing for climate change.
Well, and I noticed in some of the materials that Resource Media has put together for the events on the 18th that you are being very intentional with the wording that you're using to describe that very thing. So things that popped out to me was the emphasis on extreme weather costs and the idea of resiliency, and even specifically pulling out that 2011 was one of the most costly year on record with more billion-dollar events than ever before. I'm wondering if you could just explain a little bit more about the framing choices that you're making.
Sure. So we know that talking to people about things that hit them at home is the way to get them to pay attention. You really have to, as we often say, you have to meet people where they already are. And right now, particularly in this economy, where people already are is worrying about the bottom line. And that's individuals, that's city managers, city planners, that's government officials. They're thinking about how can we cut costs and how can we get the most bang for the buck for the money that we spend. So we're deliberately working to demonstrate that climate change is already having costs. It's already we're already having to spend money to respond to the events that we know are linked to climate change, like these incredibly costly droughts that we're seeing in the Southwest right now. The science tells us we're going to have more of those. They're going to last longer. So by focusing on the amount that we're already spending to have to respond to these events, we can start to create the mindset that it makes sense to invest in preparedness. It makes sense to invest in the kinds of actions and technologies that can reduce our risk of further economic damage from things like these massive droughts. And in addition, it's our hope that as you demonstrate both the costs that we're already facing, the costs that are coming down the pike that from impacts that we're going to have to respond to, that you also start to lay the ground for a mindset that says, wow, it would be better to spend money on preventing these things from happening than on responding to them. And sometimes that means adaptation investments and investing in the kinds of things that can reduce the human and economic costs of a particular extreme weather event, for example. But sometimes it means actually tackling the root causes of climate change. And I think that's another major shift that we've seen. We're now talking not just about preventing climate change, because we know it's already here. We're talking about both actions that can reduce climate change in the future and actions that can help us adapt to the impacts that we're already seeing today.
Well, and isn't in that there's a part to this that obviously the economic arguments are very important, but what I think you're touching on there is this other sense of security. And obviously economic security is one, but feeling secure in your community and in your home, that you're actually in a position to withstand a storm should it come your way, and that you have the a strong community and you have people that you could count on to help you in those scenarios. So I did notice, besides the economic framing, you guys are bringing in this idea of reducing vulnerability almost like a risk management perspective into this climate conversation.
That's right. When you see massive events with terrible costs, like Hurricane Katrina, for example, one of the things that came out of that disaster was a desire to put the infrastructure and the strategies in place to make sure that when New Orleans gets hit by a hurricane again, and it certainly will at some point in its future get hit again, that they'll be able to actually respond more quickly, that they'll be able to move people out of harm's way more quickly, and that they'll have the people and the infrastructure in place to make sure that they don't have that incredible loss of life and property. So the rebuilding there is focusing on making sure that there are evacuation routes that can actually move people quickly, making sure that really critical infrastructure like hospitals is on higher ground and is less likely to get the brunt of flooding if flooding should happen again. Those are the kinds of things that we would like cities to be taking action on now before they face something like a Hurricane Katrina. So that's really what we're talking about when we talk about preparedness and risk management, looking at the possibilities, looking at the worst-case scenarios from climate impacts and saying, what can we be doing now that makes sense and will provide more security so that people know that, A, we're doing everything we can to avoid a disaster, and, B, if we do take a direct hit, how are we going to respond, and how are we going to get people out of harm's way quickly?
Now, how do we scale that back up, though, to actually limiting the risk in the first place, sort of moving back into reducing carbon emissions, more of the mitigation conversation? I mean, it's been even a very public debate in the media around, you know, do we emphasize mitigation versus adaptation? And when we get into the adapting to impacts, preparing for impacts, are we reducing a sense of urgency, or are we giving too much of a sense that we can engineer and plan our way out of some of these scenarios when, in essence, one of the best adaptation strategies might actually be mitigation? So I'm just wondering what you think, sort of tipping and moving right into talking about impacts, adaptation, preparedness, does to the sense of urgency around reducing the risk itself and mitigating climate change?
I think that's a really good question. And I don't think any of us know for sure the best way to make sure that we retain some urgency, the urgency that we desperately need around mitigation strategies, strategies to reduce carbon emissions. This is a particularly tough question in the United States. Most other areas of the world have really already started to make major moves to reduce carbon emissions, and they're not having these same arguments as to whether or not those actions are necessary. Here in the States, I think, at least from Resource Media's perspective, we recognize that what we can move people towards in the short term is primarily actions that that will benefit them across all of these other areas, in terms of reducing costs, in terms of improving preparedness and improving security. And those things we can really talk about from the adaptation and preparedness side. But as I was saying earlier, we deliberately in all of our activities emphasize the costs of action and the costs of inaction and try to demonstrate that spending money to fix a hole in the floor, it doesn't matter if the roof is crumbling over you. You actually need to be addressing the root cause of these issues and not just trying to build up resiliency. And I was at a conference a few weeks ago where we were hearing on the one hand from people in Florida who are working very hard and very appropriately to improve the preparedness of some cities in southeastern Florida for things like sea level rise and heavier rainfall events and stronger hurricanes. They're doing exactly what they should be to build preparedness. But then the next presentation was from a scientist talking about how if sea level rise continues along the projections that some scientists are suggesting it will, these areas will likely be completely inundated by the end of the century. And there is no way to adapt to that. You basically end up with a situation where you have to move. And that was a compelling demonstration of what I think are the two sides of the argument here. On the one hand, you have to prepare to help the people who are already living in areas that are particularly vulnerable. And Friday's report will have some suggestions about how we can do that. On the other hand, you have to take a look at the science and listen to what it's telling us about what's coming down the pike a few decades from now and start making realistic decisions about where to invest in terms of the longer-term future. And Friday's report is really just focused on extreme events and the adaptation side. But the next big IPCC report, the fifth assessment, which we expect to come out in 2013, is going to be, I think, another sobering moment in terms of what the science is telling us about what we really can't adapt to.
Well, that's very sobering, and I've done some work also in Florida communicating around climate issues, and I think all of this speaks to the need to really consider a long time frame around our public engagement and communication efforts, that you may be starting a conversation about, you know, what can we do based on where we stand right now, what are the benefits, but ultimately you have to have that conversation within a longer-term perspective that recognizes the fact that, like in the case of Florida, the ultimate strategy might be to actually relocate. And I just feel like that is a whole new level of challenge for communicators. It's hard enough to be in the rapidly moving day-to-day communications environment that we're in now, let alone adding in the fact that we need to think 40 years ahead to how to prepare communities and engage in conversation about some of these major decisions that might come as a result of climate change.
That's right. It's a very tough position to be in, and that speaks again to why to a large degree in my work right now, I'm really focused on the things that people can do right now, things that people can do that will actually make a difference to those who are living today as well as to future generations, and will help them to be more secure, safer from these sorts of impacts, and also start to demonstrate what's really at stake here, what we're really talking about in terms of the costs and impacts that are coming.
Well, my hope is that you're successful and that despite the fact we have to be communicating about inevitable impacts now, that we can move the ball along to create the urgency around reducing the harm in the first place. So really grateful for the work you're doing at Resource Media and in support of the release of the report on the 18th. Thank you, Kat, so much for joining me today.
Thanks again for asking me.
Thanks so much. And just by way of close, I'll just mention I am a proud board member of Resource Media. So thanks again, Kat, for your time.
And we sure appreciate your time as well, Kara.
Thanks, Kat.
Take care.
Bye.